presents My Word. And here to introduce the program and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words. Those taking part are Dillis Powell, Dennis Norton, Anne Scott James, and Frank Muir. Here's round one to test the respective vocabularies. For 2 marks, can you give me the meaning of these words? We begin with Dillis Powell. Dillis, what's the meaning of colliery?
A long time ago, when films began having colour and technicolour, an American critic said that colour, technicolour would never be any good as long as the actors looked like roast turkey.
Mm.
Was it that kind of colour?
That kind of colour, very much, yes. It's a commercial term, a trade term. It means that a particular product has a colour, such a colour as denotes good quality. And it can be used of hops, which have to be a particular kind of yellowy-green, or coffee, which heaven knows what good coffee is supposed to look like. I never know.
I think it's mixed up.
But one or other of them. So it's colliery is a trade term. Dennis Norton, what is a murex? M-U-R-E-X.
It isn't a former wife of Frank. What a murex.
I think it's a mollusk, isn't it?
Yes.
From which the Roman, the Tyrian purple used to come.
Yes, quite right.
Because it's
I think it's a mollusk from which the...
Yes, all right. 2 marks between you. It's a shellfish which yields a purple, I think some people would say a crimson, because Roman purple really was crimson, a purple dye, and it comes in Browning, who fished the murex up, and what porridge had John Keats, two very difficult lines. And it occurs in the Mediterranean. 2 marks. Anne Scott James, what is a hackery? H-A-C-K-E-R-Y. Hackery.
Well, it's either a second-class riding stable.
That's not a bad shot. Beast of transport.
Yes, a mule for her.
No, I give you 1 out of 2, which is fairly generous.
Rent a mule.
It's an Indian bullock cart. It's mainly used as Indian bullock cart for transporting freight or goods. There was a lighter version, which I think was used sometimes for people, and it's a sort of vulgarization of a Hindu word. Now, Frank Muir, what is the meaning of annulate?
It's what how Henry VIII greeted. Need I say more? His tardy bride-to-be from Flanders.
Yes.
Annulate.
It's
something to do with the annual rings found on the inside of trees, if cut across. They are annulate. In other words, they are ringed.
You're absolutely right. You get your 2 marks. I haven't heard it applied to trees before, but it perfectly well could be, because it means marked or furnished with rings or formed of rings. It could be a sort of tube made of segments, one after the other, each of them being a ring. And it comes from a Latin word meaning a small ring. You've got it absolutely right. Before we begin round two, I give each team a quotation for them to write, and then I want the 2 women members of the team to go on looking at those quotations, because before we finish, I shall ask them where the quotations come from. And Dillis Powell and Frank Muir, your quotation is, I do like to be beside the seaside. And Anne Scott James and Dennis, yours is, a happy issue out of all their afflictions. And at the end of the program, I shall ask Dennis and Frank to give me their idea of how these quotations came to be said or written. Round two is a round of questions about names and nicknames and so on. 2 marks again. Dennis Powell, Potiphar was Pharaoh's captain of the guard, but he's somewhat less well remembered than his wife. Why?
Well, Potiphar's wife got into some kind of bed trouble.
With Potiphar?
No, that's the point. With Joseph. Joseph was accused of getting into trouble, or getting her into trouble.
Yes. She's recorded Potiphar's wife as having tried to seduce Joseph while he was in Egypt with the Israelites, and he repulsed her and fled, leaving his garment behind, and she used that as evidence and falsely accused him, and he got shoved into clink, and it was all very unfair. 2 marks. Dennis Norden, who or what was known as a Johnny Come Lately? C-O-M-E. Johnny Come Lately.
I hope it is, but I don't know, use that to mean a sort of upstart or.
Yes, a kind of upstart. Put it in the right hemisphere, Dennis.
Oh,
I'll give you 2 marks.
Is it like Johnny Comes Marching Home? Is it?
I think that'd be a false trail. I should go a bit south. Or a long way south.
Australian.
Yes.
Australian.
Yes.
It is. Oh, how nice. We haven't had
a
derivation from Australia. This is a guest word. We welcome all the way from the Antipodes. Here is Johnny Come Lately. What record would you like?
Oh, do you think it's somebody who's just arrived from England?
Yes.
Parvenu.
Ah, yes. Just come from England.
A greenhorn, as we say.
That's it. Exactly right. You've fought your way home. It's an Australian term for a recent immigrant, and therefore, by inference, a very inexperienced immigrant who doesn't know very much about the land he's arrived in. Anne Scott James, we've heard of Mr. U Nu, who was formerly Premier of Burma, but what does the U stand for? Mr. U Nu.
Oh, it's Mr.
Yes.
Mr. Nu.
That's it.
It's the,
what's
the name?
All right. Oh. 2 marks. U is the Burmese equivalent of Mr., and so you shouldn't talk about Mr. U Nu or even about Mr. U Thant at the United Nations. Frank Muir, who was Molly Bloom?
Molly Bloom was a fictional character,
yes.
Jack, from an Irish novel.
Yes.
Set in Dublin.
Yes.
And she was the very feminine wife of Leopold Bloom in James Joyce's Ulysses.
Yes. All right, and 2 marks. Well, in the next round, the unrepentant compiler of this program has taken some favorite and much-loved examples of English verse, added on his disgraceful lines to them, and he asked members of the team for 3 marks to give me, first of all, the correct version, and then the name of the poet. We begin again with Phyllis Powell. The boy stood on the burning deck whence all but he had fled. He'd stayed behind to wash his neck before he went to bed.
That's not right. That's not right. A cannonball blew off his leg, so he stood upon his head. I know the name of the boy.
Yes, that'd be a help.
Casabianca. Yes.
And the name of the author?
Junior. The name of the author, she was a lady.
Yes.
Yes, it's Hemans,
I think.
Hemans.
Yes. Casabianca by Felicia Dorothea Hemans. And she wrote a lot of other well-known poems. This is Casabianca. And the real version is, the boy stood on the burning deck whence all but he had fled. The flame that lit the battle's wreck shone round him o'er the dead. That's a pretty tough scene. Now, Dennis Norden. The shades of night were falling fast as through an alpine village passed a youth who bore, mid snow and ice, a cage full of performing mice.
Very good technique, isn't it? A youth who bore, mid snow and ice, a banner with a strange device.
That's right.
Excelsior.
Good. Never wrote it?
Longfellow.
Good. 3 marks it is. Well done. And now Anne Scott James. I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high o'er vales and hills, when all at once I cried out loud, hot rum is best for colds and chills.
And all, what,
when all at once I saw a cloud, a host
of golden daffodils.
Well done. It's Wordsworth's I wandered lonely as a cloud, and it's about daffodils and not about rum. And now, Frank Muir, gather ye rosebuds while you may, old time is still a-flying, and what is offered free today, tomorrow you'll be buying.
Well,
Robert Herrick.
Yes.
Author of Little by Little. It's a poem to virgins on recommending them not to be.
Yes.
It's tomorrow you'll be dying.
That's it. There's one
with flowers, aren't they?
One line in between. Gather your rosebuds while you may, old time is still a flying. And this same flower that smiles today, tomorrow will be dying. And it's Robert Herring, to virgins to make much of time. Well, now a round of odd men out. What I do is give each member of the teams an assortment of names and titles and so on. And for 2 marks, I want them to tell me which is the odd man out and why. Lillis Powell, Roo, Ratty, Eeyore, and Piglet.
Ratty is Wind in the Willows.
And the others?
Amen.
Absolutely right. All right, 2 marks it is. Ratty is the odd man out. Roo and Eeyore and Piglet are all characters from A.A. Milne's Pooh and Christopher Robin books, whereas Ratty is a rather more serious character from Kenneth Graham's Wind in the Willows. 2 marks. Dennis Norton, The Big Sleep, The High Window, Farewell, My Lovely, and The Thin Man.
Ah, yes. The Thin Man was by Dashiell Hammett.
Yes.
And the others were by Raymond Chandler.
Well done. And what were they?
They were Philip Marlowe stories crime stories, but they were novels.
Yes. Quite right. These three, Big Sleep, The High Window, Farewell, My Lovely, were well-known detective stories by Raymond Chandler, but The Thin Man, like The Glass Key, was a story by Dashiell Hammett and also a film. Anne Scott James, The Tower of London, Old St. Paul's, and A Journal of the Plague Year.
Two of them were by Harrison Ainsworth.
Which ones?
The Tower of London and Old St. Paul's.
Right, yes.
The Journal of the Plague Year.
Defoe.
Yes. The Tower of London and Old St. Paul's were 19th century novels written by W. Harrison Ainsworth, whereas the Journal of the Plague Year, although equally fictitious, was purported to be a journal, and written about the year of plague, which was 1665, by Daniel Defoe in 1722. Frank Muir, Wordsworth, Coleridge, Browning, Southey.
Southey, Wordsworth, and Coleridge were mates, weren't they?
Yes.
And Browning's mate was Elizabeth Barrett. They were the late poets.
Yes.
And in fact, Browning was later, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
He didn't like Wordsworth.
No, 2 marks it is. Wordsworth, Coleridge, and Southey, as Frank Muir says, all knew each other and were friends, and they were the so-called lake poets because they lived a lot of time in the lake district and wrote poetry about it, whereas Browning was later and different, and if you associate him with anything, probably you do with Italy rather than the lake district. Now we come to the last round and go back to those two quotations I gave the teams earlier in the programme. 2 marks, Lillis Powell, can you give me the origin of your quotation? I do like to be beside the seaside.
I do like to be beside the sea. It's a popular song, Victorian period.
A little later than that.
Edwardian.
Yes, that's near enough. 2 marks. Now, I am Scott James. Can I have the origin of your quotation? A happy issue out of all their afflictions.
Well, it sounds like a prayer.
It is.
I think
it comes from the Book of Common Prayer, a happy issue out of all their afflictions, and it's the prayer for all sorts and conditions of men, which is a jolly nice sort of blanket title because it brings in everybody. Now I'm going to ask Dennis and Frank to give me their explanation of how these quotations came into being. And for this round, the marks will go to whichever incredible explanation gets the longer applause from the audience here in the theatre. So back to Frank Muir and his quotation. I do like to be beside the seaside.
Good evening. The other night, I was in the middle of a very busy bar, and a man came up to me. It was an extremely busy bar. It was the seventh bar of Dvorak's New World Symphony. And he said, may I compliment you on the way you are humming the seventh bar of Dvorak's New World Symphony? I said, thank you. He said, but anent another subject. He said, my word. He said, why do you always twist the last lines? You know, if somebody gave you a line like, I do like to be beside the seaside, it always ends up, I goo dyke to bay beside the hui-fied or something. He said, why can't you just do it without messing about with the words. To say that, because that I do like to be beside the seaside, it came up quite recently without any sort of twisting. I mean, the line just sort of came out. It was with one of my inventions. I don't know whether you're aware that I do these inventions. I invent quite a lot of things. I have this curious mind, you know. What this country really needs is a three-sided gramophone record, because when you think about a normal gramophone record you buy, it's got two tunes on it. One's marvellous, which is why you buy it, and the other one's always lousy on the other side. But if a gramophone record had three sides, you see, ha-ha. You see, they'd write a good tune and put it on the front, the first side. Then they'd write a bad tune, as they always do. Then it would be the time to write a good tune again. So when one record would have two good tunes and only one lousy one, which would be marvellous, you see. So I set to work. I made my first three-sided record quite simply by getting three ordinary gramophone records and putting sticky tape on them and making a sort of pyramid. And that worked quite well, except when you put it on the gramophone, it didn't turn round because the arm got locked in the middle of it. My breakthrough thought was to make a very thick gramophone record, about an inch thick, and then turn it on its side and put the third record sort of round and round the edge, like the original Edison cylinders. And that really works terribly well. All you need to do is to amend a gramophone so that it's got a little spindle sticking out of the side. You then play the top and the bottom, and you stick it on sideways so that it's vertical, swing the arm out, and then it'll play the third side that way. And I've made one of these, and I've composed three songs for it. The first one is a protest song called Singing with the Wind, and that's it's a song about it's a sort of municipal protest song. There's no point in protesting about vague things. It's, why don't they have more than two lampposts between us and Rosemary Lane? Why is the cesspit not emptied more than once a quarter? On the second side, I've written recorded a stimulating song of the open road. It goes rather vaguely. Oh, when the wind is in the face and the tile is on the pile, well, the horse and the hail and the boy, bless the boy and the boy. Baby. And the third one is rather a lyrical ballad. I think it's terribly nice. It goes sort of, to be beside the one I love, to be beside my dream, to be beside myself with love, is to be beside you, my dear. So you see, I'm going to be very rich, because either they're going to buy the whole invention, or I think they're going to buy that last tune. Which would make me a lot of money too, because quite frankly, I don't very much care for the protest song, the A side, and I don't think much of the Song of the Open Road, the B side. But I do like to be beside the seaside.
Perfectly frightful invention. I'm going to go on to Dennis Norden, and if you remember, his quotation is quite different. A happy issue out of all their afflictions.
There'll be no singing. Because this is rather a sad one, actually. That phrase, a happy issue out of all their afflictions, will forever stand as a memento to me, to a chap called Herbert Tozer. You know the phrase, accident prone? That doesn't quite sum him up. He's more what the posh lady columnists are apt to call a victim personality. Perhaps if I said he's the sort of chap who gets run over by an ambulance. Ever since I first knew him, life has treated Herbert like the back wall of a squash court. Bang, bang, bang from all directions. I first met him, actually, in the army, where he earned the distinction of being the only soldier to get wounded during his preliminary medical inspection. You see, while the medical officer was sounding Herbert's chest, a brigadier came in, so Herbert threw up a salute. In so doing, he caught his arm in the rubber tube of the stethoscope, pulled it clean out the MO's ears, and it snapped back smack into Herbert's teeth. Discharged with a disability pension, he was directed to agricultural work on a farm, where a cow fell on him. It's a very rare occurrence, I remember the vet saying. I've never known a cow faint while being milked. But this one did. It just gave at the knees and toppled over sideways, smack onto Herbert. On his holiday, the only holiday he ever took, a sea cruise, he managed to get seasickness and lockjaw at the same time. When I did meet him again after all these years, I must say I was rather shocked by the change in his appearance. He brought me up to date on what had happened to him since we last met, and it was really like listening to a publicity trailer for Fox's Book of Martyrs. In a restaurant, for example, he had choked on a small fish bone, which is not an unusual occurrence, but he happened to be eating chocolate mousse. Another time, on another occasion, he bent down to get some luggage out of his car, sprained his back, and was completely immobilized. What made it memorable, it was the first day of his honeymoon. Subsequently, his wife ran away, clearing out his bank account, removing all the money from his private account, taking away all the furniture, opening his wallet and licking all his postage stamps. To say I was appalled at this chronicle would be understated. I said, Herbert, a life like this, do you ever feel like ending it? Do you ever feel like it's too much? He said, well, only once. I've only once felt like it. He said, that was the time I stabbed myself on the aerial of a portable television set. He said, I actually got as far as ringing up those people who ask you if you are at the end of your tether to ring them up any time, night and day. I said, what happened? He said, I got the engaged signal. I said, I don't understand you, Herbert. I don't understand a person like you. No future, no savings, no health. How do you live? Well, he said, I saved all the press cuttings about the things that have happened to me, and I've stuck them all together, painted them silver, and cut little things out of it. Look, and he opened a suitcase and showed me a lot of little silver horseshoes. He said, I sell lucky charms. As I say, I can't hear that phrase without remembering Herbert today. A snappy horseshoe out of all the affliction.
By your vote, ladies and gentlemen, the contest of the two stories is won by Dennis Norton, and he and his partner, N. Scott James, also win the entire contest, and that brings to an end this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dillis Powell, N. Scott James, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norton, introduced by Jack Longland. The program was devised by Tony Schreien and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC.